AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Gray Malkin Lane Patreon channel, where we get to analyze really obscure, fun characters from an analytical lens. Once in a while, we just get to pick a character that's so stupid, and it's so fun. I mean, I'm putting my judgment out there already, but we are here to talk about the mess, the absolute horrid mess that is Razor Fist. The name alone implies everything you need to know. We're going to have an amazing time. I'm so excited to be joined by two friends I have not hung out with in far too long, the incredible TJ Nice and the incredible Kenny Christ. Let me welcome you both to the show. I'll have you introduce yourselves with your name and pronouns. And my initial question, you are an amputee who now has swords for arms. What's one thing you struggle doing on your own? Let's begin with the wonderful TJ Nice. TJ, welcome back to Gray Malkin Lane.
Hi, I'm glad to be back. My name is TJ Nice. I'm a cosplayer. I use he, him pronouns. My cosplay handle is Gravel Road Cosplay. You can find me mainly on Instagram. You can find me at different conventions across the country and hopefully further beyond the United States in the future. That's one of my goals for, what is this, 2025?
It is 2025.
Yeah. So that's one of my goals for this year. I've been cosplaying for 11 years now. I specialize in sewing, so I've been sewing for about 10 of those 11 cosplay years. If I was a double amputee and I had swords for hands, I would have so much trouble knitting a sweater for my mom for Christmas.
Ooh, I feel like you could get like a special like attachment. You'd like a little magnet hook at the end of the sword and you just knit away. It's just farther away, right? Like you got to pull the swords back in a little bit.
Yeah. I thought I would go a little more esoteric rather than the obvious.
And let me also welcome Kenny back to the show. Hi, Kenny.
Hello, hello. Happy to be here. My name is Kenny Christ. I go by he, him. And if I had razors for fists, based solely on his outfit of choice, I have to imagine he would get the most horrendous wedgies. And I feel like picking a wedgie with swords for arms would be really fucking difficult.
Yeah, you would need like a personal aide whose job it is to be the wedgie picker. Like,
not teenagers.
Or like a little hook on the wall that like you can just kind of go, you know, because he makes choices. All right, lastly, yeah. Chad Anderson. You guys, this episode is going to be real stupid. Just in advance, we're going to get a little raunchy. We're going to have some fun. Okay, because here's where I begin. My pronouns are he, him. But if I have swords for arms, how do I wipe my ass? You get a bidet,
yes.
But how do you masturbate? How do you eat your dinner unless it's all like a prepared smoothie? What do you do with swords for arms except for
how do you blow your nose?
Right, yeah. Right. Like you gotta. Okay, so like I'm gonna take this like so seriously for a minute. The being an amputee is a disability, and maybe he can like detach swords, and he has like little hands that he can put on. Otherwise, maybe his house is just ultra equipped for disabilities. That's what I want to believe about this character. But we're gonna get to a run in his appearances in when he's like a member of the Hood's army, where he's so disgusting. He like lives in the sewer and likes everything stinky and makes a bunch of teenagers like wait on him hand and foot. So this man, nope, he's gross. Also, he's triplets. That's where we have to start the show, because he's a truly insane character. How did we end up on Razor Fist? Kenny, I feel like this was your idea, but it was probably mine.
Okay, so I'd only read 80s era Razor Fist. So in my very limited view, he was a hilariously camp, completely ridiculous, over the top, just like C-lister villain. And then the further I read, I'm like, oh, this guy super sucks. This guy's the worst.
He's not C-list villain. He's like L-list villain.
Yeah.
What sucks about the Razor Fist?
I mean, there are a couple times in there where he says he's Chinese, but I'm like pretty super sure he's just some white dude.
Oh, yeah. His name is like, his last name is Scott. This man is not
right.
Chinese. Maybe he lived in China for a minute, but.
Yeah. So there's cultural appropriation right there. I feel like he's really dragging the amputee community through the dirt. Like, I feel like they could do a lot better. I was shocked and appalled all by this villain from Wolverine that I had this like little soft spot for. And I'm like, oh, and now I feel kind of gross.
And TJ, I message you and I say it's been too long since you've been on the show. How about Razor Fist?
I vaguely remembered him from it was a miniseries, the Sex and Violence miniseries. I read that back in the day whenever it came out because that X-Force team and the authors, Kyle and Yost, I think it was, I just loved it. And so he stuck in my mind. And then, like, half the time, they take him super serious, but he is like bonkers, like bananas crazy. And other times, they actually realize how stupid and idiotic this whole concept is.
I almost prefer it. So we get him as like a disciple or as like a mercenary, but then we have writers who will write him as just fucking crazy. Like this is an evil
Yeah.
crazy man, and that's almost my preference. Although it's really gross with this guy. He's a really icky character. It's gonna be fun to jump in, and he is a guy that fights the X-Men sometimes. Now the fun part is on my show we're firmly entrenched in 1975 this year because we're in Giant Size X-Men number one era, and Razor Fist debuts in 1975, which kind of makes it fun to examine. We've been talking about second wave feminism, we've been talking about Blaxploitation, we've been talking about Native American veterans, and here we and we've been talking about radioactive island monsters, but here we get to jump into the world of Shang-Chi, where there is white writers kind of capturing that essence of Enter the Dragon, Bruce Lee, like high action. And have you guys ever seen Enter the Dragon?
Yeah,
I
my
have.
dad was huge into Bruce Lee movies whenever I was little. And then so I remember seeing a lot of them whenever I was little. And I tried to revisit some of them later. And some of them are a hard watch, the perspective that I remember. Yeah, you can definitely tell the ones made by white American directors or writers versus some of the like Hong Kong transition ones.
It remains a pretty incredible film. And if you've ever read like Power Man and Iron Fist, there's a character in Enter the Dragon that gives like very Luke Cage energy. And then of course we've got like some white guys who are also ninjas, right? But you almost get the idea that this is like a buddy team up comedy that they put later. Shang-Chi's a really amazing character, and there's a lot of really problematic content. But his early stuff, it's fucking good. If you go back and read Master of Kung Fu or Deadly Hands of Kung Fu, there's a lot of really powerful stuff in it. I eventually want to do the Trial of Silver Samurai on my show. We'll get there, and that will like really heavily lean into that kind of genre, along with like the Japanese cultural appropriation that comes along with that character. But I love that villain. So Shang-Chi fights a bunch of really crazy villains who often have just like a weird little gimmick, like let's give someone a ponytail with a spiky ball at the end. Everybody has different weapons, and they're all named after their weapons. It's me, sword. It's me, mace. It's me, I don't know, catapult. They're all these just garrot, you know, like they're all these names of like whatever weapons you can stab or hit someone with. And there's a whole bunch of these fucking villains. They're everywhere. None of the ones I just mentioned, I think, are actual Iron Fist villains. I'm just throwing out what come into my mind. There's a whole long list of weird ones. Let's fast forward though to the best version of Razor Fist in the Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings movie that came out a couple of years ago, where Razor Fist is played by the German actor Florian Montenot, if I'm saying the name right, who is just a fucking beautiful man and probably has been on an OnlyFans video with Kenny and his partner at least once.
I wish. Oh my God, he is so gorgeous. As soon as the trailer came out for that movie, I was like, oh, I've got to find who this is and follow them immediately.
He's also like really charming. Awkwafina gets a moment during that film, if you recall, where she's like, razor fist. It's like an oxymoron because your fist is blunt, but the razor's sharp. And you're like, oh, there's a little play on words action. And there's an outtake scene I found on YouTube where he has a moment with her and he's like, look, I am an amputee and I'm from Hungary and I should not be here either, but I have swords for arms and I will fight for you. Like, it's this really ridiculous
I love it.
moment. You know what? Just lean in, man. Just lean in.
The trailer, like the bus scene and Razor Fist fighting and slicing through the bus and Shang-Chi fighting on that was really interesting. Once I watched it, it was really good. It did have a lot of like the old school kung fu movie motifs, and especially whenever they're fighting and then with the bamboo structure and it's starting to fall apart. I like that took me back to some of those old movies that I used to watch with my dad.
Yeah, it's really charming, actually. And in any version, I don't even know who the kill person is in this one, but in any version, version from this film where Razor Fist and Shang-Chi are lined up, you'd marry Simu Liu every time and you'd fuck Florian Montano every time. That's the only correct answer, whoever the third person is paired up to
Oh,
be.
for sure. For sure.
So this character, research-wise, was just a wild journey of stupidity. There's not a lot of depth to this character. There's a few attempts. A lot of times he just shows up in a crowd scene, and he has a whole bunch of appearances in the early 2000s when they did the like Hood's Army that Brian Michael Bendis was using in all the new Avengers and Avengers stuff. There's like 50 different supervillains running around. There's some mutants on the team, but they get a whole bunch of appearances where they don't really do much. They just get punched in the face in a big crowd scene by a group of a random Avengers. And that's kind of all you get from a lot of his appearances. So reading some of his stuff was pretty simple because it's like, oh, he showed up here and oh, he showed up here. But he's a fun foil for Wolverine specifically in a way because Wolverine's got the claws and this guy's got the sword hands. And there's something about the two of them kind of going at it. Wolverine versus Silver Samurai is always fun too, but this man is, his arms are swords. Like there's, what's not fun about that? Kenny, any thoughts on a Razor Fist versus Wolverine? We have a few fun bouts.
So that was my introduction to Razor Fist, was as like a hired mercenary to take out Wolverine.
You're talking the Marvel Comics Presents stuff.
Yes, that's the one. That was my first Razor Fist. And so in my brain, he's just this like silver fetish gear wearing diva with like long blades for hands, like, yes, I am here to fuck shit up. I loved him immediately. I screen grabbed that on my phone because I was, or on my iPad, because I was just like, it's been in my favorites folder for years.
The
And
costume, it's so
it
dumb.
is. I prefer him in the bright silver number. I feel like it gives him more pop, more. He just looks like a sad, like wannabe dominatrix person who's just is not very good at his job.
Yeah, so that's the thing we have to consider. This man is choosing this field of work. He wants to be a mercenary with sword arms because there are other options out there. You can attach other
He
things.
could be a sushi chef,
I was gonna say
which is
exactly that. He could
also
be a sushi chef.
equally culturally appropriative. Like if he wants to stick to that motif, there are options.
Well, right, but those swords aren't stuck on his arms, is what I'm saying. He could be Edward
That's true.
Scissorhands if he wanted to be. Like, there's other alternatives. He could be Dildo Fist if he wanted to. There's a lot of ways this could go. So we're gonna jump to Master of Kung Fu 29 through 31. This is 1975. Doug Mensch, who of course is the infamous Moon Knight writer and other things. Paul Galassi on pencils. Action as you've never seen it before. Fists of fury versus slashing swords of death. The rampage of Razor Fist. And we get a full back view of a truly bizarre villain. Now he does not wear this costume in the issue itself, but he's bent all weird here as like Shang-Chi's punching him, and from the elbow up, he has sword arms, but he's wearing a singlet and red tights and thigh-high black boots that accentuate those calves, honey. And he has a wedgie swimsuit with the biggest wedgie potential, like more than Psylocke, because he's got a lot of meat back there. And when
And
you
he
look
has no
at him,
hands to pick it.
yeah, it is two hams with a singlet on. And he has like big old metallic studs all around his waist. Like it's a nuts costume. It's almost like that time Kitty Pride put on the like striped socks and rollerblades look. Like it's truly crazy. Inside, we see Shang-Chi being sent after a heroin dealer named Carlton Velcro, which is an amazing porn name all by itself. And Velcro has an employee. He's nicknamed, and rather amusingly, I think, Razor Fist. This guy has a leather cowl. This is his actual costume, a very skimpy black singlet, thigh-high boots, sword arms. He's otherwise basically naked. And then Razor Fist chops up a marble statue of a nearly naked man in order to demonstrate his power. He just hacks it to pieces. First, he cuts off the head, then the torso, and then right through the butt cheeks. And no, I'm not kidding. Like, he slices the statue in half through the butt cheeks. And Kenny is so turned on right
I like I said, I love early Razor Fist.
now. So Shang-Chi goes after the Velcro's operation, ends up finding Razor Fist, who says, "Welcome, intruder. My name is Razor Fist. Yours is unimportant and soon to grace a tombstone. Mr. Velcro has requested that I greet you. More precisely, his instructions were to shake hands with you. I am sure you'll appreciate Mr. Velcro's wit more fully once you meet him yourself, one piece at a time." And the implication is here, I'm going to slice you through the butt cheeks like I did that statue just a minute
Just like
ago.
that statue.
Now, Kenny,
Oh.
There is a thing in the gay culture where we have a little bit of an obsession with singlets. There are singlet parties. There are jocks and socks parties out there. You
Yes.
want to talk about what people love about a singlet?
So here's my working theory. One, they can be incredibly flattering on a body, but when you sort of like look back through it, like strong men, early wrestlers, they were all hyper masculinized and at the time dressed in this gear.
Sure, like old-timey, like circus energy, right? Like Bluto the Strong
Yeah.
from the Circus
Yeah,
of Crime. We go
the
back to
high
like
waist shorts and the
1890, right?
down to your belly button with the cleavage popping out. For me, that's where my brain goes. I love that old strongman look. I just think it's really cool. And they always have like the big mustache and go
Big
figure. I'm
handlebar
into
mustache, yeah.
go figure. I'm into buff men with mustaches. Who would have thought? As far as like fetish wear goes, typically it's very expensive. So a singlet is a really easy way to break into it. They're really comfortable until you have to use the bathroom. Then they get tricky. They allow you to sort of like dip into a fantasy without like really having to financially commit to anything.
I mean, it hugs the curves. It gives you both,
Yeah.
it gives you ass, but also it's the thighs and the arms and the shoulders. My husband looks great in a singlet. My children do not know what a singlet is, but they have heard me teasing my husband, who's very shy, about how you should wear a singlet to a party. So once in a while, my kids will crack a joke like, "Mike, you should wear your singlet." And he's like, "No, I'm not doing that." But they don't know what it is. It's a funny joke in my family.
I have made a couple of singlets for cosplay. They weren't for like any kind of gear or anything. I was doing it as a like old-fashioned like swimsuit, gentleman's swimsuit kind of thing.
Yeah, like a proper bathing suit. Yeah.
Yeah, proper bathing suit. Because I did polka dot man. I found this polka dot fabric and I made a flight helmet like him with the goggles and the singlet out of polka dots. I do have to say I enjoyed it. I got lots of compliments and I enjoyed wearing it. And so I could see what you're saying.
I love an obscure cosplay reference. I have never fucking heard of Polka Dot Man, but I just looked him up, and now TJ, you have my mad respect because that's a
He's
crazy.
DC, right?
Yeah, that's an old Batman crazy. That's
Yeah.
fun. That's really fun.
He was in the Suicide Squad, the sequel.
Yes.
And then so I didn't want to make his full costume because I loved him in the movie, but then I found this fabric. Like that's how a lot of my costumes work out. I just find this fabric and I get inspired by it. And then so I wanted to make this singlet and I wore a singlet.
So we jumped to issue 30 back in the Shang-Chi series. You are a most skilled intruder. You have penetrated Mr. Velcro's security system to its final and most effective defense. My name is Razor Fist. Know that I shall spit upon your blood. Whoa. You penetrated Mr. Velcro, and now I will spit on your blood. This guy's kinky, y'all.
He's so needlessly intense.
He says, "You know that my name is Shang-Chi." I'm using my accent, obviously. I must pass you, Razor Fist, but I do not wish to spill your blood nor to dilute it with hatred. Ha! You are swift, Shang-Chi. My mouth waters. A minute later, he says, "A pity you have danced away, Shang-Chi. My blades have grown thirsty with the promise of your blood." Again, this guy's into some kinky. This is the guy on the apps where he signifies what he's into, and like it's a very, very specific like
Yeah.
singlets, blood, and spit.
Super into knife play.
There's a big old fight scene. Shang-Chi breaks one of Razor Fist's blades and then tricks him into like stabbing another shirtless guy. I don't know. Razor Fist also loses an ear in this fight, which is crazy. And in 31, Velcro fires a shot and Shang-Chi dodges and the shot hits Razor Fist and like he's dead. And his last words are, "Velcro, stop. I can finish him off. You can't shoot now. Not when I'm in the line of fire. Not when I've been so loyal." Oh, Velcro, what have you done?
They were crazy. So this was before I realized that Razor Fist was three people. And
Again, they're triplets. They're three triplets who are all Razor Fists.
Were they in this the same car accident? How did it happen? We have
I
no
need the
answers.
backstory.
There's just too much for there to be no explanation.
Master Kung Fu 105 to 106 in Hong Kong, a new Razor Fist and a black leather singlet, of course, with straps over his nipples, okay, slices through some beads and says, "The name is Razor Fist. I'm looking for Shen Kuei." Shen Kuei?
Yeah, this is the cat. This is the Marvel character, the cat, who's this really sexy martial artist. I think the cat's really hot, actually. A little
The
pussy
man
cat tattoo on his chest. He's hot.
not subtle at all. The man known as the Cat, and this one only has one sword on his left arm. One sword? What? The new Razor Fist is nearly as skilled as the original, not as strong, but just as swift. And if his single blade renders him less lethal by half, then his possession of a hand more than compensates in versatility. When the men refuse to talk, Razor Fist first slices through the chair, then kills some of the men. Still you refuse? Still you glare at me in defiance, letting nothing but blood pass from your lips? Here we go. Blood. It runs in the family.
I mean, he's got Thor arms. What else are you going to do?
Right.
Then he starts hacking at some boats and then holds his swords to a woman's throat. Finally, they give him the lead on Shang-Chi and Pavane.
Pavane, I think is how Pavane. I said.
Carlton Velcro's former bodyguard, who is a woman in a leather vest and leather panties and a whip. Oh, there's a theme here.
Like the tiniest little panties. Like it's it's another choice.
I don't even think you could call it a G-string. It's just... It's a small leather triangle.
Truly, truly. It just barely is enough to cover anything.
Leather and a wish. That's what you Razor Fist killed Pavane's pet panther, then fought with Shang-Chi until Pavane tied up his ankles with a whip. He's captured, but it turns out there is another, yet another Razor Fist with a sword on his right arm, and the three of them are triplets. Dun, dun, dun.
It turns out Velcro was alive.
He's alive, and now he's a cyborg. Calling Shang-Chi Chinese scum, Razor Fist, who is still tied to a chair, is mad when Pavane says, "How is it you and your brother have come so closely resemble the original Razor Fist, missing hands and all? We don't. The original had blades on both arms, but we only have one blade on opposing arms, like mirror twins. We were in an accident." Oh my god, I'm losing it. We were in an accident, and when we wake, well, Carlton Velcro explained that he decided to make an asset out of the loss we'd suffered in the accident. And then Pavane says, "An accident? He no doubt arranged for you so he could manufacture two duplicates of his most successful assassin. The more efficient duplicates at that." That's a lie! Carlton would never do that! They are so dedicated to their boss.
Yeah.
But he tells them where to find Velcro and the third Razor Fist. At the mansion in Marquesas, so Shang-Chi and Leiko Wu attack, and Razor Fist also calls him Chinese scum, and then Velcro gunned him down, and Razor Fist 3 is dead, dead, dead.
So the brother who had two sword arms died, and then somehow some accident happened, which I think they just fucking volunteered. And they're like, "Let's be Razor Fist twins. I'll give up my left arm. You give up your right arm. And we can go after the cyborg guy who killed our brother." Who, like, because they wanted revenge, right? Like, it's a family honor thing, question mark. It's a truly, truly...
Question mark, for sure.
Because these guys are all, like, deeply trained in martial arts, at the very least, right? Like, they have some significant training, and they're super ripped and buff, and they, like, shave their chests and put on singlets. And I don't know, they almost give like luchador energy in an odd way. These are crazy characters. Kenny, what are your thoughts on the Razor Fist twins coming back to avenge their dead brother?
I don't even know. I don't even know where to start with those two. First of all, to be so obsessed with like slicing and penetrating things and dress so slutty with your siblings. I mean, it's like big Fenris level vibes.
anyone watching White Lotus season 3?
No, but I've heard and I need to. It sounds really good. I love Parker Posey. Oh my god,
there's very some famous brother on brother action without trying to spoil anything. It's crazy.
I think somewhere in my notes I have like they seem like they'd be like bouncers at a Fenris club, like just standing out the door in leather and a mask and like weird knives for hands.
Like maybe they're just living their best lives, you know what I mean?
Maybe. I hope so for them.
They both have opposing hands so they can help each other out.
And they can high five.
And high five.
Yeah. Wow. And those questions we asked at the beginning, if the brothers do that stuff for each other, we're just gonna move on here, friends. So Kenny, fuck, marry, kill, Razor Fist with two sword arms, Razor Fist with left sword arm, and Razor Fist with right sword arm.
I mean, I'd kill double sword arms because I'm really clumsy and like I don't need that many sharp objects around. So I'd marry left hand and then I'd fuck right hand.
You gave this some serious thought. I'm very impressed.
I did. This podcast is important to me, Chad.
It's important to me too. Well, okay, we jump to now we're leaving the world of Shang-Chi and we're bringing Razor Fist into the main Marvel universe. There's only one left now. And their names, by the way, are like Doug and William. I don't even remember the third Razor Fist's name. I'll see if I can find it.
Did they give him
one? The two. What's that?
Did they give the original a name or was he just Razor Fist?
Here's the crazy thing. I don't think this guy has ever appeared in a handbook. Well, I mean, like he's been mentioned, but I don't think he's ever had a handbook entry, which is crazy. crazy. Because I worked on the handbook team. I might have overlooked it, but I don't think he's ever had one. That's where we would sort that shit out. Now we're to West Coast Avengers number 11. I love this title. This is early 80s, just crazy Marvel nonsense.
This is when he joins Shockwave and Zaran, the Weapons Master, who I got Swordmaster and Weapons Master confused. And so I was really looking at this strange when I was reading these.
Zaran, the Weapons Master, is one of those Shang-Chi villains that gets used every once in a while, like Batroc the Leaper. He's supposed to be the master of every weapon. You give him nunchucks, a shuriken, and a fucking kazoo, and he can use any of them in combat, right? It's that idea.
Didn't he use, like, kunai with ropes later, right? No, that's never mind. That's someone else.
And Shockwave is a British man named Lancaster Sneed, which is an amazing name, who dresses in some, like, uniform. It's fine. It's like a yellow suit. He's a stupid character, too.
Yeah. So they are going after Mockingbird in Los Angeles. Out of nowhere, these villains just decide, now is our chance.
There's a character called the Deltite. There's a whole Deltite history. Go to Marvel Wiki and look up the Deltite. We're not going to explain it here because it truly has relevance to anything X-Men.
Yeah, none at all. He gets to hack at a palm tree. He gets called Vegematic Man, which was really cute. I have a hard time with Hawkeye, and this was a moment when I enjoyed his like banter a little bit. Vegematic Man. He also gets to thinking about how because she's a woman, her emotion makes her wild. Before he's defeated, he says, "We represent the Blood Tongue of Hong Kong. They plan to open operations in America. Superheroes, SHIELD, the masses of your police. None shall stem our inevitable victory." And then he gets immediately knocked out.
You know what? You mentioned them being bodyguards at the Fenris Club, so I actually should go here for a second. The Deltite, you guys know what life model decoys are? These are like little SHIELD robots that are programmed to look like and act like people. The Deltite is a life model decoy made by Nazi scientist Dr. Arnim Zola and programmed with like an AI replica of Baron Wolfgang von Strucker's mind. And he goes on to be a big SHIELD villain. So the fact that he hired Razor Fist is relevant, I suppose, for this
guy. Yeah. that tracks. Much like many of his appearances, almost immediately knocked out. He's just an oaf, isn't it? Like he's this like this super like flamboyant, like swinging his arms everywhere, and then like whop.
That's all you get. We're gonna jump to Marvel Comics Presents. This is a serialized book where 4 8-page stories are coming out basically once a week. Terry Cavanaugh, my friend, was the editor on this book, and it's just a crazy journey. It lasted for a long time. Issues 1 through 10, we have Claremont coming in with a Wolverine story right away. Madripoor relatively new here, and he also recently gave us the character Jessen Hone, who becomes Tiger in Madripoor. Yes. And this is one of the stories where we get Claremont world building a little bit. I have an old episode on Sapphire Styx where we cover some of this arc here. She's a crazy vampire lady who is just cunt. Like,
whenever they like they fixed the Psylocke problem, I was like, Sapphire Styx, why do I know that name? Why do I know who she is? And then when I was reading back through this, I was like, oh, that's why I know.
There she is. It's Razor Fist. Okay, so when we jump to this series, we have Claremont and John Buscema, which is an amazing combination already. We're in Madripoor, and there's a guy named Roche, you don't need the details, who has hired Razor Fist, who's back in his little familiar costume, in order to be his enforcer. Razor Fist hacks up a bunch of guys to prove his strength. "Your dossier and reputation are not exaggerated, Razor Fist," he's told. He's sent after Wolverine, and he's been listening to Stevie Wonder, which is an adorable little anecdote about this guy, because he yells, "Your fat's been signed, sealed, delivered, courtesy of Razor Fist." So it doesn't officially mention Stevie Wonder, but he's using song lyrics in his jibe where he mentions fat being signed, sealed, and delivered. Crazy. His blades are in sheaths during the first part of the fight. So this is a thing where we have characters with swords or like Wolverine's claws, right? You can never show people bleeding until more recent comics. So like Black Knight, when the Avengers would always have to hit people with the flat of his blade because he can't stab anyone. So I love Razor Fist with little sheaths on his swords. It's crazy. Razor Fist unsheaths his swords, and he offers Wolverine a quote, "a quick, clean warrior's death." And he stabs Wolverine and throws him in the river and then salutes him with a blade and says, "I wish we'd met under different circumstances, stranger, and in a fairer fight. I have a feeling you would have made a worthy foe." And what he means is, I wish you'd had a singlet on and we'd met at the gay bar over in Madripoor, the princess bar, which is the real place. But Wolverine's back a few issues later and his claws are out, and Razor Fist is believed to be dead at the end of this fight. This is a fun journey. He's not a huge part of it, but but it's pretty fun.
Yeah, this
Just want to say, one of my qualms with Razor Fist throughout his publication is the inconsistency of his blade size. And this is he has the perfect blades in this little series. Like the perfect length. Like they're like long and menacing, and they look really dangerous instead of like blocky salad choppers. Like it's
Do
ace.
you think he has like a little cabinet, like a shotgun cabinet at home with like different sized blades? He's like, which one am I in the mood for today? It's
Which one goes
very
with this outfit?
right.
With this singlet?
Okay, we're gonna pause here to talk about the infamous Razor Fist trading card. This is the one with Razor Fist in his black mask with like the collar, and he's just all like rippling oiled muscles, and his legs are spread wide, and he's got his blades like resting on opposite. I'm picturing myself at like 12 collecting the trading cards, and my mom walking by is like, this one hits the top of
Oh,
the
yeah.
pile. Right.
You would definitely want to hide this from your mom. And this was published. This got wide distribution.
I
This is bought with
mean,
very little.
you can recreate this look, both of you. I'm just saying, if you wanted to.
My plan for this was to recreate this trading card, but the printer head on our 3D printer is impossibly jammed, and we have to order a new one. And I've been so busy with work that I didn't have time to sew it. But like, I love this. This is so my speed.
It's like the cover of like one of those like old porn movies somehow. I don't know.
Yeah.
This is like the raunchy section of like the old gay like leather store in like one of those old cities with the gay districts. It's got like some name with like blood in the title. Like, wow. It's just wow, you
Blood
guys.
spit knives.
Yeah.
I'll spit on your blood, he says. Wow, it's
Oh my
intense.
God.
Avengers Spotlight. A group of weird supervillains were sent after Hawkeye, including the Death Throes,
This
Bob
is
Kane.
the Death Throes is an organized criminal group of jugglers. They're juggler supervillains. I love them.
Yes.
Death Throes, Bobcat, and Bullet Biker, and more. Among them, Razor Fist, here in 1989. Razor Fist scares Hawkeye by dragging his blades against the walls, making a shing, shing, shing sound. Hey, Archer, you look dog tired. Let me help you out by lightening your load. Maybe take an arm or two. And I appreciate you making it easy for me. For that, I'll make this as painful as possible. But gets a bunch of dives and karate kicks before Hawkeye glues the 2 points of Razor Fist swords together. Later, Mockingbird kicks Razor Fist in the face in her
Yeah.
flouncy outfit.
The fact that he got defeated by like his swords getting puttied together and he's like, hey, like he still has feet. What? That's ridiculous. A lot of his dialogue gets like vaguely sexual. Like, I want to finish him.
Not even
And like, let
vaguely.
me lighten your load. Like, it's so much.
Oh God, I put in my notes. He's in his little black dolly mommy number. There's inconsistency with his blade length and girth, which is very unsettling to me. He was literally goop. That's how he was defeated. He was goofed, gagged, and whatever else the drag queens say, goofed, gagged, and something else.
He wants to sign, seal, and deliver your fat, but now he's been good.
Yeah.
But just, oh my goodness, this character's ridiculous.
But I did appreciate that he did not care about the bounty. He just wanted the like it was about principles for him. It was he, it was it was the it was his principles that he was after Hawkeye for.
Unpopular theory, he finds Hawkeye very hot.
Yeah. Oh,
Just
it's all the penetrating arrows that's like really like up his alley.
he's like into like a little bit of like a skinny, like muscly guy who's like trying a little too hard, right? Is that his type?
When you read his dialogue through a lens of like fisting, it is
It writes
so
itself.
funny. This is not for PG listeners, everyone. Feel free to fast forward about 60 seconds if you don't want to get real raunchy with us. When I was living in Seattle, I went with some friends to, it was like an amateur porn film festival that like you were eating popcorn and drinking wine, the whole packed theater, and we're watching like amateur porn on the screen. I can't remember the name of the festival, something raunch, I don't know. There was a whole video where, I mean, the camera effects had been reversed, obviously, but there was just this guy getting things pulled out of his ass. So they were like, it was like the magician's handkerchief, and then they'd like pop a ketchup bottle out of there, and then like it would get increasingly bigger. And whenever someone says fisting, that video comes to my mind. And when it's sword arms, I'm just not okay. Not
You better hope those sheaths are on. Like, oh my God.
okay. I
She
don't
has
get
different
real
attachments
dirty
than
on this
that.
show very often. This is that episode, everybody. So I think. TJ, how you doing over there?
I'm hanging on. I'm hanging on by my sword fists, my razor fists.
You sure are. Okay, we're gonna jump to Captain America 411 412. This is Mark Gruenwald just having a fucking blast. It's the AIM Weapons Expo. Crossbones, who is his own conversation, is up on the stage and he has to enter like a tournament and fight a whole bunch of just random supervillains. We get the character like we get a sumo character tossed in. We get Mad Dog tossed in.
Ramrod. I can't wait.
Ramrod is tossed in.
Ramrod.
There are two Ramrods. There is an old Ramrod that Moondragon created. Moondragon powered up the first Ramrod, and the second one is one of the nasty boys.
Yep.
Oh, I
Well,
bet.
and even that wording, Moondragon powered up the
Yeah,
Ramrod.
in her Madame McEvil days. Stay tuned for the trial of Moondragon in June on my show, everyone.
Oh,
It's
love it.
a journey. So Crossbones has to fight Razor Fist on this like boxing platform while all the supervillains watch. And he asks the question we've all been wondering the whole time. Question for you, Raze. I can see how those things would come in useful when you shave, but how do you dress yourself? And he breaks one of the swords and defeats Razor Fist pretty easily.
But this is
I go
actually
back and
Captain
forth.
America as Crossbones.
Oh, yeah. It's Cap dressed as Crossbones.
Yes.
Excuse me. I'm so
Yes.
sorry. That was a crazy oversight.
I've only read a few Crossbones, and that was in the what, like mid-2000s Thunderbolts. Whenever I think Luke Cage was
Yeah.
running the Thunderbolts, I read him during that.
That's when they
And
gave Crossbones superpowers. It's a weird story.
yeah, and then so that's what I'm familiar with him as, and I can leave him. Most of the time, I say I could take him or leave him. I could leave him.
In Elektra number six, the architect has put a contract out on Elektra, and Razor Fist is there to claim it. The swords are bigger to match Elektra's boobs. She defeats him in like two hits.
This is the Deodato Electra, who like her tits are enormous. This is
Yes.
Emma Frost like children's book lingerie cover era of comics.
Yeah.
I was trying
And
to figure
like,
out who Diodato used as his reference for this Electra, because a lot of the times he uses actors and actresses as references.
Notes on this episode where he is the campus villain and he gets his ass kicked again. I get the appeal, he's kind of hot in this, which he was. And then to see Spider-Man 81, this is debuting a new look for Razor Fist. He's in head-to-toe spandex, black and yellow, and he has new cybernetic hands with sword attachments, which he was probably pretty stoked about, like having hands again. He works with Shockwave to take the Son of the Cat callback to some Shang-Chi. It takes the Son of the Cat hostage in order to force him out of an area in New York. Once the kid is safe, Pat chops off both of Razor Fist's new hands.
Which is, there's it's like Misty Knight. Her arm always gets ripped off.
Yeah.
See what
Yeah.
happens.
And then that's it for
That's
Razor
it.
Fist.
Yeah. DJ,
Yeah.
who's going with the next two?
Wolverine 167, Razor Fist in a singlet. Yep, bald. Yep, but he's got an eye patch. Back with machetes for arms, fought Zaran, the weapons master, in the Bloodsport competition in Madripoor. Zaran stabbed Razor Fist in the chest, leaving him for dead.
This is where Frank Thierry is writing the book, and a bunch of random characters get brought in to have like little quick fights, and they're all a pre-established.
Forearm. Forearm is
Forearm
one of
gets his
them.
neck broken by Anaconda. Toad,
Yeah.
I think, dies here. There's a couple crazy, like, what the fuck? And again, blood sport. So Razor Fist is all over this. Blood and sport. But again, he apparently has lived because the next time we see him, it's a one cameo appearance in Deadline where it's one of his best moments ever.
And Deadline 2, Razor Fist is at the bar with no name, holding a beer between his two sword arms. Like, that image is perfect.
It's just, how do you pick up a stein and bring it to your mouth? God damn, I dropped another fucking beer. Like, it's just someone give this man a straw.
Yes! Oh my God, I didn't even think of that.
Okay, we're gonna jump to Toxin. This is a weird symbiote character who has, if you know Venom and you know Carnage, Toxin has a lot of history at Marvel. It has a character a symbiote that gets used quite often, but never very consistently, and it's not one fondly remembered. But they're really trying to make Toxin happen here. Toxin gets a 6-issue limited series written by Peter Milligan and Derek Robertson, and Razor Fist has his biggest set of appearances ever because in this series, he is one of the big bad guys. He's a major villain for a symbiote. Let's see. After the amputation, you had prosthetic hands fitted? Yes. Then you actually chose to have them removed and replaced by those things? Correct. He's gets to recruit a whole group of children, like disabled, addicted, mentally ill children, to move into the sewer with him, like Morlock style, and be his servants and act like he's caring about them, and he marks them with sword cuts across their chest. This series is violent. He gets to like kill a whole bunch of dudes. There's blood spatter fucking everywhere. He tells these kids, in exchange for the truth, I expect unflinching loyalty. You felt your body being shredded. You felt the blades slicing into your flesh. But the sharpness of my blades, the sureness of my touch means there's no blood. There are no wounds. So he can slice you so thin that, unfortunately, I'm not always as careful with myself, he says. You will need to work to be counted as one of my children. He initiates one guy named Anton, cuts him, gives him a basket of laundry to do, and he's living in a super stinky sewer with corpses around. And when he smells these, like, because it's decomposition, when he comments on the smell and says, I find it keeps me on my mettle. And after Rikers Island, the stench of decomposition is actually pretty fragrant. I got a little slow in Rikers, reflexes dulled, so now I keep them well honed. Cats found in the street, even a few streetwalkers, none get out. So he tells one guy, I'm 250 pounds of sociopathic rock hard muscle and razor. What you gonna do? That's his Grindr tagline. I'm 250 pounds of sociopathic rock hard muscle and razor. And when you show up at his house, there's corpses on the ground and he wants to cut your chest and call you his boy and then make
then you do his laundry.
That's his goal. He allures which his children in via Grindr.
Which is wild to me because he gives such bottom energy. That man is not a top.
This guy's gross. This is where, again, I kind of like that they're leaning into the crazy, but he's gross. Gross, gross. Why would anyone choose to follow this person into the sewers?
I don't know. And like, it was here that I like started really reconsidering my love for Razor Fist. I was like, oh, maybe I don't know him that well.
TJ, would you join Razor Fist gang?
Even though I am really good at laundry, I don't think so. I think I would pass.
So Pat Mulligan is the new toxin. He's a kid. He comes in. He's got a shirt tucked into his pants. And Razor Fist goes, might have guessed. A guy who tucks his shirt into his underpants. I'm doing civilization a big favor by killing you. Okay, we're going to jump to issue 3. We're skirting around here, obviously. Listen, I studied under a kung fu master who, by force of all, could rearrange his molecules into a bow tree. Wow. That old man taught me the sound of one hand clapping. I taught him the sound of no hands clapping. We get a close-up on his bloodshot red eyes. The symbiote says, say, Mr. Razorfist, how do you go to the bathroom? It's been bugging me. You want to take a leak? How do you do it? And he says, very, very carefully. And when the symbiote reveals itself, Razor Fist runs for it. He slashes at a kid named Lulu, who's one of his kids. There'll be plenty more desperate, sad little losers to take your place, Lulu. We see him cutting up some cops who like it, it seems like, for information. They like come to him and want to be cut up. And then he comes back in Toxin number 6, where he goes after Toxin's dad and basically beats this man to death and then runs for it. We learn he's recruited more children and he plans to make more people pay him money to like not cut them. And that's kind of where it ends for him. There's some wild moments for this guy. The sound of one hand clapping is both a famous song and a famous novel. So there's like an album and a novel by this name. So he's taking that and then just making it like the worst pun.
Just read the title. He didn't actually read the book.
Yeah, he has no idea.
And then we have to talk about this random line of like he studied under a kung fu master who could rearrange his molecules. What the fuck?
Who the fuck is that?
Yeah. And then he came out of that with razor fists. He could have had a lot of other things.
How do you pee? Very, very carefully. The single best moment for this character thus far, in my opinion.
I do love, there was a line in there. Lulu was talking to Anton or somebody. She's like, he calls himself Razor Fist. What did you think he did? Charitable work for the homeless?
Yes.
Yeah. I screamed.
I mean, if you know what you're getting into, I suppose. And if you're into it.
Okay. Daughters of the Dragon, Razor Fist murdered the costume villain Freezer Burn and his wife, both in front of their baby. Then he threatened to kill the baby when the Daughters of the Dragon attack. Okay, there's a lot there. And this guy claims to be a new guy and also has a sword only on his right arm, then gets his ass kicked. The end.
So Freezer Burn was created specifically for this title. They created a villain, they killed him and his wife in front of the baby, and wow.
Civil War frontline, Razor Fist is in prison with hooks on his arms as
See,
he tries.
he has attachments. There's accessories.
Yeah, as he tries to foam it in prison.
Daredevil. Razor Fist battles Daredevil. He then joins the Hood's army, which is a massive group of supervillains. They fight the Avengers, and he's with the group for like 30 appearances. He gets legitimized as part of the initiative under Norman Osborn for a while. Then, like, we eventually get to Siege, and then the Captain America Siege tie-in, Razor Fist gets a pretty awesome, one of the coolest battles he's had in a while. There's a battle between him and then Captain America and Steve Rogers and Captain America, Bucky Barnes, and then he cuts a girl's throat.
Yeah, this guy, I mean, you know, he's got swords for arms.
Yeah, he doesn't do charitable work for the homeless.
X-Force, Sex and Violence. Razor Fist has a job for the Assassin's Guild and fights Wolverine's X-Force. He gets to impale Wolverine, I'm all here for it, who threatens to cut off Razor Fist's legs for new swords so that he can go buy razor legs. By that point, if he had razor fists and arms, he would basically be a starfish. Like, he could just like cartwheel around.
He'd be Seamus from Family Guy.
Yeah. And also, I hear his nickname is Razor Dick. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, yep.
Totally.
And then X-Men to Serve and Protect. He's only in one panel, but Razor Fist gets to fight Dazzler on her roller skates.
Yes, this is crazy. There's a roller derby, and there's a man named the Chadmeister in this story, which I hate.
So stupid.
Wolverine. AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
Number 17 through 19. He joins the Black Dragon Tong under the leadership of Jade Claw, which, wow, she is cunt. Horrible, but she is cunt. Oof. Razor Fist teams up with Soul Striker, Dark Strider, and the Rock of Buddha.
And these are all
none of which
villains, yeah.
I would say none of which I've ever heard of. I assumed they were. They fight Wolverine, Fat Cobra, who I fucking love, and Gorilla Man. There are dragons, and Wolverine is like, didn't I kill you already? And then their asses get kicked.
It's truly, there's not a lot to say here. The Rock of Buddha is a big old dude with like a necklace on. That's basically what's what he looks like. Fat Cobra is an amazing character, though.
I love Fat Cobra.
I really like Fat Cobra a lot, actually. Soul Striker is an old Shang-Chi villain who can, like... Oh, no, actually, these are villains that were created for Wolverine Manifest Destiny by Jason Aaron. This guy can, like, channel your soul into, like, pain. And then there's a guy named Fist of Fire who has a good time with Razor Fist, because that's all you need. Rusty Collins, his code name is Fire Fist. Not to be confused with that character. We jump to Deadly Hands of Kung Fu, where Razor Fist gets another big upgrade. He gets to kill Leiko Wu, who is Shang-Chi's like long-term like spy girlfriend. And he also gets to fight Shang-Chi again, yelling things like, I wish I could say it's been an honor to meet again, but the only true honor will be slicing off your limbs and setting fire to your torso. And I'll cut that smile right off your face. We also learn that he likes to go to brothels a lot, and he also gets his swords ripped out of his arms this time. Not like chopped free, but like ripped out. When we jump to Mercs for Money, Razor Fist is in some crowd shots. He's also in Deadpool Gambit and Star-Lord, Infamous Iron Man, Invincible Iron Man, and Defenders. It's all Hood Army shit. In Deadpool Assassin, he has pants on and like cyber enhancements to his prosthetics. And the caption tells us, Razor Fist, ironically, can't make a fist. Which is so stupid. And this character profile was not complete before this like very simple observation. He fights Deadpool and gets to yell things like, I'm gonna wear you like a glove. Use your flailing arms and legs like spirit fingers for the next parade. And if that was not the fisting reference that you need.
Right?
Deadpool can take it though. My goodness.
Yeah.
Deadpool gets to say things like, how do you pick your nose? And Deadpool doesn't chop his prosthetic off. He actually chops up higher on Razor Fist's arms and then grates Razor Fist's face against a trolley track. Like, it's shockingly violent. Like, there's blood spatter. Picture like running full speed and then having your face drugged while being pressed down against like concrete. And that's the visual here. Truly, truly insanely violent story. And then I'm going to just wrap up the Razor Fist stuff and then let's pause it to talk about it. Razor Fist is in Domino 4 and 5, the Gail Simone book, where he's part of a ninja bad guy group that gets to fight Domino and Shang-Chi, and they are fucking Domino and Shang-Chi. He's back in Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings, the series, number 1 and 4, where he just looks crazy. It's like full body leather, except like bare arms. But also, he has a beard here, so we're taking after Florian, and a full head of hair that's like poking out the top of his hat, like Gambit style. Shang-Chi kicks his ass twice.
He also has throwing knives. Why does he have throwing knives? He's got no hands. That blew my mind.
And then he's back in, finally, most recently, just a few months ago, Iron Fist 50th anniversary special, where he has like blunt spikes on his arms, and also he gets possessed, but also it was a dream. So the end for the guy. There is some crazy shit for Razor Fist. What do you love about this character?
I love that it's just so batshit crazy. Like I said, sometimes they'll just take him so seriously, but as a reader, you look at it and this is wild. Like there's suspension of disbelief, and then there's Razor Fist. And then other times, like Deadpool, and the other people ask, how he uses the bathroom and stuff. And then so they kind of break that tension.
Like, if here's High Camp, here is Razor Fist. Like, he is so ridiculous and so gay coded, and not just gay coded. Like, it really is mind blowing that this, like, reading stuff that he did and said in like the 70s and 80s is like is absolutely hilarious. Because I feel like he was probably back then, at least, like, probably meant to be taken kind of seriously. And I don't know if we're just completely desensitized to it now, but there's nothing menacing about Razor Fist until Toxin.
So my favorite thing about this character is the camp, obviously. He's very camp, he's very silly, and it's very fun to just see him get his ass kicked by a hero. He is not given any rich interior world. But here's where I'm going to go very serious for just a minute. We in the queer community have a long history of like kinky sex and leather. There is hanky codes. There are like back alley bars with like a basement where people are getting fucked in the back room. Go visit an Eagle in 1975 and you will find Razor Fist there, but also like 30 years later. This is the bathhouse pre-AIDS era, like no holds barred.
No.
So the hanky
No holds
code,
barred.
oh, good Lord, good Lord. The hanky code, and we don't talk about this on the show a lot, but a lot of queer culture, gay sex is so taboo that queer people have had to find their own places to celebrate sex. Heterosexual sex is celebrated everywhere, particularly for men who sexualize everything. But for gay men, it had to be in the shadows. So it is bathhouses, it is private clubs, it is spaces where people could like go in anonymous and try to have some fun, and everybody has their kinks. As a therapist in Salt Lake City, I work a lot with the kinky sex community, not doing work related to kinky sex, but I have a supportive understanding therapy practice. So if you are a person who wears a dog collar or you're into wearing diapers and you want to come talk to me, I'm not going to judge you and we're going to talk about it. And everybody has their kink. If you join a site like FetLife, there's all these like questionnaires you can take about kinky sex and you like figure out what your stuff is. I'm into domination or being tied up or diaper play or whatever it is, right? God, I've mentioned diapers twice in one episode. We also have historically though the queer culture of the hanky code, which is where you put a hanky of a certain color or pattern in a certain pocket and you're walking down the street, and it was a way to symbol to other men, particularly in large metropolises where a lot of gay people live, what you might be into. I'm a pretty vanilla guy, but there are lots of like, you wear a green hanky in a certain pocket and it means you're a hustler. You wear a gray hanky, it means you're into bondage. Red is for fisting, which is a really uncomfortable like color coordination. Yellow is for piss. Purple is for piercing. So this is people who enjoy being pierced. There's certain colors for pegging and bondage, and brown is for scat. And you guys, this is all stuff that I am not into. I also don't judge, but also I'm a little bit vanilla and I don't always want to hear about it. But Razor Fist has like four hankies hanging out his back pocket.
At all times.
There's red, yellow, brown, and purple, at the very least, probably gray, maybe black, which is the S&M. I don't know.
Absolutely black.
He
there's
got the
some
whole
like
magician's scarf rope coming out.
Yeah,
For real.
this is like the edge of porn, right? Like I work with clients as therapeutically. I work with clients who enjoy like setting up scenes. Again, not in my office, but we talk about it. Like, how can I safely enjoy? Because one of the biggest heterosexual kinks is rape play, even though people don't like to talk about it. Domination is a huge piece. So for people to set up a scene, particularly if you're a woman, you need to make sure you're safe and you have safe words and you're doing the right things. So people will come in and be like, how can I do this? People enjoy being flogged or having knife play where they're even not pierced, but like gently cut during sex, which if you're reenacting trauma is a dangerous thing. But if it's a kinky thing you like, just make sure you are safe, 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 safe. Razor Fist
Go to
gives
a class. Go to a class.
Yeah, there's classes, there are
They have
bondage
classes.
classes,
Go to
there
a
are
class.
books you can read, there's all kinds of stuff. Reach out if you need some support. I'm a pretty vanilla guy myself. However, this is a huge part of queer culture, and Razor Fist weirdly kind of captures all of that in a way that, like, all of my heterosexual listeners are like, well, maybe I'm rethinking my subscription to Graham Alkin Lane because I had an education just now that I was not sure I needed. Do you guys have thoughts on queer culture and kind of kinky sex and its correlation?
I'm quite a kinky person. I will not go into all the detail. You can follow my OnlyFans if you want more details on it. But I totally get it. There's a fascination with the taboo, and you want to experience these things that you're not supposed to, that you've been told your whole life they're wrong, they're wrong, they're wrong. And sometimes, they are rape is wrong. But whenever it's like rape play, you call it
Rape is
totally
wrong, but
different.
rape fantasy enacted in safe ways is okay.
Exactly. It's a and I think they prefer the term ravaging now is something that my partner said, let's say. But there's definitely something to be said about like you. I grew up in the middle of nowhere, Texas country on a ranch, and your imaginations run wild when you're by yourself. Like I get it.
Well, and
So
everybody's got kinks. Everybody,
yeah.
everybody, everybody. Even trust me, people, if
Oh
you
yeah.
could look at people's porn history, there's all kinds of stuff
Yeah, it's a really important part of queer history and culture because like those are things that like because we were told that we were wrong, we were abominations. We're like, yeah, well, I'll fucking show you what an abomination really is.
there. And if you go to any established queer city or city that has a queer neighborhood, Chicago, Seattle, New York, there's going to be clubs even now in the days where a lot of these clubs have shut down. There's still clubs like the Eagle where the decor is like penis wallpaper, and the whole place kind of smells like a urinal, and there's a whole weird dark room in the basement. Gay raves still have this piece of culture. Again, I'm a dad, and I'm also a local professional, so I don't frequent these kinds of things, but it is an absolute part of the queer culture that gay people don't often want to sit with.
Okay, this might be a poor correlation. I was gonna say it's like Baskin Robbins 31 flavors there, and that might be a stretch, but hang on with me. Hang on a second. It's something for everybody, and then sometimes you don't know what you like until you sample it. You get that little purple spoon at Baskin Robbins and you try it, because like you said, vanilla, and I'm semi vanilla. We won't go too far into it, but if somebody suggests something you don't really know, like some stuff you are definitely not for, but you might have a wondering in your mind, and then so you try out different things at the Baskin Robbins.
At my office, I work a lot with the trans community, a lot with the queer community, and I really emphasize consent, of course, and education, of course. The two things I'm always challenging people on are number one, contracting. Like, what is it you're looking for? Where are your boundaries? Who has agreed to them? And then second, what I call moral scaling. Don't judge somebody because they do it differently than you or because they're not into the same things as you, but it's okay to let yourself experiment in safe ways as long as you have aftercare as well. So there's the therapy hat in the kinky sex world for everybody.
And if there is like for those of you out there who might have kinks that you want to explore and you don't know how to do it, find a sex worker, find someone who specializes in that so that you can lay out specifically what it is that you want to do, what you want to try, and then you are giving yourself a safe environment to participate in those acts.
Or
And
a
that
team
is,
partner. There are Facebook groups
yeah.
and local community events if you're in a bigger city, but really you can
Yeah.
connect with people online. However, if you show up and this man has sword arms, I don't think you should stay.
No. A safe partner is, highly important, is really important, because, do your research, like you said, and if you are wondering about certain things, you have somebody, you dip your toe in, get that little test scoop.
So now I'm just picturing Razor Fist except with little purple spoons instead of swords.
Holding at the tip of his machete hands.
Okay, my second point on Razor Fist very quickly is this man is a character with a disability. Whether he chose it or not, he's a kick-ass fighter, and I am always here to support people living their best lives with their disabilities. He is making a living, and he is doing it in shitty ways. And you know what? Pat on the back, buddy, in your little singlet with your wedgie. I am here for you. But here's the third thing about Razor Fist. In what ways would you like to see this character explored? I do not need any rich backstory. A single, like, couple lines about the triplets training together would be kind of funny. I like when he's made fun of. I like when he gets his swords glued together. I even liked it when Deadpool hacked his elbows off, but I didn't like it when they dragged his face on the subway track. That was a little bit for me. Do you want
He's
him?
gone through enough.
Do you guys remember Garrison Kane, Weapon X, who could like shoot his fists at people? Like, I kind of want Razor Fist to have like a sword that like shoots, and there's like a rope that comes out of his arm, and he can yank it back. Like, there's some fun ways to upgrade this character. Like, give him like lightsaber arms. Give him like I want to see him fight Corsair with like an energy sword arm. What are some ways you'd like to see him explored or like upgraded that could be fun?
I would like to have him bisected at the waist and get this cybernetic thing at his waist. And I think this is a Thundercats villain, actually. Like, he can spin at the waist like a tornado and then just like be the inside of a blender and like spin around with his swords going around.
If that's not a Thundercats villain, it is most certainly a He-Man villain.
Oh goodness. Razor Fist versus Fisto. That's a He-Man villain. Good Lord. Kenny, any upgrades you want to see for Razor Fist?
I don't like Razor Fist when he's like too overdone. Like there was a moment in somewhere in here where he went a little steampunk, and I was like, well, this is kind of a weird look for you. I mean, everyone's like trying to find themselves. I get it. I just don't think that was his look. My favorite Razor Fist is the like long, thin, menacing saber-like swords and like the incandescent silver bodysuit. That is, I want him looking like a RuPaul filler queen for the rest of time.
This guy, I don't know. You give him like a steady job, and I don't think his life changes at all. I think this is a messed up human. I think he's depraved, and the insanity of him just murdering people in front of their babies and like slicing children to do his laundry in the sewer. You know what? Go, buddy. Like, you live your best life. You do you, and we'll let Wolverine like slice you in half once in a while. You started strong and you ended strong, and I'm here for you next time you show up in your slutty little costume with your stupid sword arms. Like, let's
Maybe stop
go.
off and maybe stop off and see Doc Samson, once, twice a month,
Have a good session. Your name is Douglas Scott the Razor Fist. Like, this guy has been like white Ivy League kid who just like, there's so much shitty about this character. He's
Who
the
apparently studied in China with a master of kung fu so good he can arrange his molecules at will.
Just a truly abysmal character. I often end these saying, I love this character. I want to write this character. I only want to write this character getting his ass kicked. Or Victor goes to a gay bar and he looks in one of the bathhouse rooms and Razor Fist is in there and he goes, nope. Like, he thinks,
Then Shatterstar jumps
he
over
thinks,
his shoulder, all for
no,
it.
that's what I was going to say. He thinks Shatterstar's got swords. I'm going to call Shatterstar because he can hold his own with this guy. I'm not going in there. I need a healing factor if I'm going to go in there. It's gonna
Oh,
work.
my cheeks hurt from laughing.
All right, we're gonna wrap up, everybody. I hope you had an education. We will put a disclaimer on this episode because this might be the
It needs
dirtiest
it.
one. So far, the smut episode has been the dirtiest, but this one might be dirtier than the smut episode. I think we went there. So thanks, TJ and Kenny, for taking that ride with me. We're gonna put this out on the Patreon on May 14th. The next episode following this on the Patreon is a much tamer ride into one of my favorite supporting characters, the incredible Elatus Forrester, the only character who to have fucked both Cyclops and Magneto. She's that like ship captain lady. I love her. I love her. And then over on the main show, watch out for the trial of Jamie Madrox, the Multiple Man, which I'm very, very excited about. Where can people find you both online? And is there anything you would like to plug? Let's go TJ and then Kenny.
You can find me at Gravel Road Cosplay on Instagram.
You can find me on Instagram at Ken Christ. You can find my links to various websites at my linked to my Instagram. It's
I love how shy you're being right now after this discussion.
I
You're like,
know, right?
I
I
have a little
just should have thrown out.
website, pinky pinky, dimple dimple.
But now my website is genderilla.com.
Prepared a little game for us to play that we just didn't need. I was going to ask you questions like, would you rather have feather hands or banana hands? But we just don't need to go there. Like, Razor Fist did everything we needed,
It
and
really did.
that's all that was
It
needed. So thank you both for taking this kinky sex ride with me today. I had a
did.
delightful time, and thanks everyone for listening. We'll see you back here next time on the Grey Malkin Lane Patreon. And now stay tuned for some thoughts on fascism as a special guest and I talk about a Red Skull story and its modern applications. In the years after World War I, Adolf Hitler quickly made a name for himself in the volatile political climate of Munich, Germany, as a fiery speaker for the German Workers' Party, which was later renamed the Nazi Party. He thrived on disruption and confrontation. His speeches were full of vitriol against the Treaty of Versailles, against Jews, against communists. He would stoke unrest in beer halls and draw crowds, disillusioned people, who would then go on to hold rallies and disrupt other rallies that were not sharing their same beliefs. These rallies weren't just political gatherings, they were flashpoints that frequently erupted into violence, a clear sign of the growing threat that Hitler posed to the public order. The first time Adolf Hitler was arrested was in 1921. If you recall, he did not rise to power until 1933. He was arrested after his faction staged a violent clash with a rival political meeting in Munich. The event demonstrated Hitler's growing ability to incite chaos, but he served only a brief sentence. Then, 2 years later, in 1923, his ambition peaked with the beer hall putsch. For those of you that have been listening to these episodes, I referenced the blood flag in a previous episode. That's where this came from. This was a failed coup to seize power, and the coup ended in bloodshed as the cops opened fire, and a lot of Hitler's compatriots were killed at the time in this, and Hitler was arrested. This time, he served a 5-year prison sentence for treason, which of course later was his kind of clarion call because this really announced him on a national stage. This public arrest really brought a lot of people to him that weren't in his favor before. While he was in prison is when he wrote the infamous and terrible book, Mein Kampf. In these books, the pages of this book, he spelled out a political strategy that combined aggressive nationalism, racial purity, and the need for authoritarian control, principles that would become the bedrock of the Nazi ideology. He also emphasized the power of propaganda and mass rallies, making it clear that that emotional manipulation would be crucial to his movement as well as national policy. And Mein Kampf, it's really poorly written. Truly, I've read snippets, it's bad. But it was initially dismissed by many and ended up gaining traction among Hitler's supporters and then grew in circulation as the Nazi Party expanded. What began as the rantings of a fringe agitator soon became a blueprint for Germany's darkest chapter. His early arrests meant to silence him, instead, it gave him that platform and credibility among the radicals, transforming him from a rabble-rouser on the fringes to a political figure with a dangerous and lasting influence. Now we're going to jump back to the world of Mark Gruenwald in Captain America 387 through 394. I'll continue this story directly into our next episode, but this is where the Red Skull is back, and he opens a private supper club, which he calls the Mask Club, where supervillains can go hang out and enjoy a fine dining experience so long as they have a mask on. And it's the one place he doesn't have to wear a mask because his face looks like a Red Skull. So Skull has a private dinner with Mother Night and Baron Strucker, who wonders at the Red Skull being bold enough to dine out in open with no mask on. "What's the sense in being rich and evil if you cannot indulge your whims every now and then?" says the Red Skull. After he scolds Mother Night for calling him dear in public, the Red Skull receives word that someone has destroyed his two spare clone bodies that Arnim Zola had been keeping for him. So the Red Skull assembles his new operative team. This is a supervillain group called the Skeleton Crew. I actually really love this team. It's really terrible, but I like it a lot. We have Mother Night, Crossbones, Machine Smith, and the old Nazi sleeper robot. "Who is out there gunning for me? Magneto? He's supposedly dead. The Kingpin? He wouldn't dare venture out of his territory. Dr. Doom? We've maintained Cold War civility since my resurrection. Then who? Everyone else who hates me has too many scruples to go out and murder my unborn clones. This is maddening. I am the Red Skull, the most dangerous human being on Earth. Who would dare risk my wrath? How horrible must I be to make the whole world quake at the very mention of my name?" Oh, poor guy. So, five new guys, top assassins trained by the Taskmaster, are hired to dress like Captain America to go fight the Red Skull in his little red underwear. This is a running theme for this character. So, he murders all five of them who are dressed like Captain America with his bare hands. "Oh, the crunch of cartilage, the breaking of bones. It's been too long since I've been able to indulge myself like this." He kills four of the men while bragging about the super soldier derivative in his veins, and the fifth then teleports him away. Turns out it was a trap. So the Red Skull wakes up bound, still in his underwear, as a guy named Hauptmann Deutschland stands in front of him in the colors of the modern German flag. "You're an embarrassment to the German
German people, he says. You're a symbol of Nazism, our shameful past. Until we have purged ourselves of you, the world will never let us live down that ignoble period of history. And the Red Skull replies, if you had done the intelligence work you claim, you'd known that I no longer espouse the old ways. I have transcended Nazism, Der Führer's little dream. I have my own agenda of nihilism. Oh, but the world still associates you with Nazism, says Hauptmann Deutschland. No matter what you wish to label your specious philosophy, no one can escape his past Herr Schmidt. Well, it turns out the Hauptmann works with two other superheroes called Blitzkrieg, and there's a guy named Time Spirit, and both of these are really obscure Marvel characters. Go look them up. And they have a group called the Schutzheilgruppe, which translates to the Group of Protecting Saints, or basically the League of Guardian Angels. And the Skeleton Crew attacks, and they also get neutralized. So, jumping forward, we now get the Red Skull in a bathrobe. He's seated with straps on his wrists, ankles, and waist, as he is blindfolded and gagged, and his whole team has been captured with him, and they're presented to the German public for an unauthorized public trial. The man in charge is pleased. You have done your nation a great service bringing in this detested war criminal and his collaborators. Considering how dangerous these people are, we will begin the trial this very night. The prosecutors are ready. Now they need to interview the captives to set up a defense. But the Red Skull merely says, I do not recognize the validity of these proceedings. I have nothing to say to you. The Hauptmann says, let me get something straight, Schmidt. You have no possible means of escape. Your lackeys have all been incapacitated, same as you. Within the next 24 hours, you will be executed, and Germany can live down your misdeeds. So hours later, he's still strapped in the chair, which is also an electric chair. Like, we could try you and then just kill you, which is kind of smart with this guy, frankly. Schmidt is put before the camera for his trial, but Machine Smith has broken free, and very soon the Red Skull is freed as well. The Skeleton Crew holds hostages. Red Skull then claims he is not the original. He has different fingerprints because he's in a cloned body of Captain America. So then the Avengers attack. Thor, Captain America, and Iron Man are here to escort them away, but surprise, it's actually not the Avengers. It's Arnim Zola piloting some meat puppets. So the Red Skull is now free again. They blow up the ship they've left behind, hoping to kill any innocents aboard. And back in Washington, D.C., dressed in a green suit, the Red Skull decides to close up his offices later when his body is found with a bullet in its head with the phrase justice is served written on the wall in blood. It looks like the scourge has striked again. Finally, they find the corpses of Mother Night and Crossbones as well, and they summon the FBI, and they find video surveillance of the scourge killing the group. But of course, it's all a ruse. The corpses are all meat puppets. The video footage was created by Machine Smith. So Red Skull retires to a private chalet in the Rocky Mountains. He calls Mother Night, his girlfriend, a stupid sow, and then he has meetings with members of all the groups that he's sponsoring. The Watchdogs, the Resistance, his daughter Sin is here, the Power Broker, the Secret Empire, the Taskmaster, Arnim Zola, Baron Strucker, Minister Blood. These are all terrible people. He takes their quarterly reports and he kills the Scourge in the room for being ineffective. And later he rants, none of these fools is doing enough to whip this wretched world into submission. I need new blood, someone in my organization willing to take risks, try new things. Mother Night tries to bring him some coffee, offers him a shoulder massage, and he spits it out and orders it to wipe it off the floor. Now wipe up that mess. Wipe, wipe, wipe. So the Red Skull orders the Skeleton Crew to break Viper out of prison. This is Madame Hydra. And when Crossbones questions him, Red Skull fires Crossbones. Like, you're fucking out of here. Get out. So soon the Viper is brought before him, freed from prison. Madam Viper, you poor thing, to see the way the government treats the gifted. Is it any wonder we both seek overthrow? I am, of course, the Red Skull, and I offer you the opportunity to fulfill your wildest nihilistic fantasies. We'll continue this story next time, but I know this was a crazy world to jump into. Let me welcome my dear friend Dotun Akande back to the show. Dotun, are you a Red Skull fan?
Who is? Who wants to be? But
what was it like for you to jump into this crazy world of Captain America? There's a lot happening. I know I threw you into the deep end here.
Yes, there's a lot. There's a lot happening. Crazy indeed. Crazy indeed. I laughed, I sighed, I gasped. Every emotion was just on the table for me. Crazy, crazy individual.
The Red Skull's often a bit player. This is Grunwald treating him like he's getting time every issue. Like, we're taking this character very seriously, and he's the worst.
He's the worst, man. That's crazy. Also, I wanted to ask, before we get into anything, do you read your kids' bedtime stories?
I used to. They don't want to hear them anymore.
Oh, really? Do you do the voice acting thing too?
I used to do a lot of theater, but yeah, I hope you t enjoyed my terrible German
Oh,
accents.
terrible! Really? I continue.
So let's take this story by story just a little bit. We open with kind of this mask supper club for supervillains, which I'm really into the idea, actually. What did you think of the mask club?
Whimsical, I guess. Yeah, but from a visual perspective, I really like every character that I saw in this book. Very interesting take. I don't think we would go that route today, but I like what I saw. I like what I saw.
So, a legit question from the Red Skull to you, Dotun. What's the sense in being rich and evil if you cannot indulge your whims every now and then?
Ah, funny you'd say that because I took a screenshot of that moment. Right? I think the way he views the world is just interesting to me. And I want to get to know his backstory. I don't think I know his backstory. Any idea?
Yes, it's very unpleasant. Yeah, there's large sections of backstory for him actually. He comes from his backstory really reflects the backstory of Adolf Hitler in a lot of ways. So he comes from a very weird home where like his mother died and his father committed suicide and he was like a starving crazy person on the street before Hitler took him under his wing and took him and turned him into like an evil man. I mean, that's the short version, but it's a really dark story actually and really parallels the life of Adolf Hitler directly.
So I'm getting that he's like Hitler's puppet.
Yeah, he's like Hitler's boyfriend. His
Better.
protege.
Better. But yeah, he's a master manipulator because when we get to the part where the Avengers come in and stop the public hearing and everything, I l literally thought that the Avengers had come to save the day, only for me to see that they were like meets puppets and everything. That was fantastic. I was not expecting that. That was fantastic. And he's also the master of distractions. Yeah.
So we start with the mask club, right? I'm this very evil person. I'm gonna set this fancy table around me. But anyone who wants to be around him has to be a sycophant. They have to bow before him. They have to recognize his superiority. The second anyone questions him or embarrasses him, he calls them fool. He humiliates them. Clean the coffee I spit up off the floor.
Why?
You're
Why? What?
fired. Yeah, wipe, wipe, wipe. It's terrible. But like again, it's very Hitler energy in that way. And then we have this kind of private life where he's dressing people up as Captain America so that he can murder them in his underwear. It's also crazy. Did you have thoughts on that scene?
Well, I understand those fantasies coming from his perspective. Little wins, little psychological wins in his mind, I guess. It's crazy.
Yeah, another genuine question for you. How horrible must I be to make the whole world quake at the very mention of my name?
Half as horrible as he is, I guess.
He's so picked on, this evil war criminal.
Yeah.
So then we have these kind of odd superheroes who are capturing him and trying to bring him to justice, which is there's a lot of parallels in real history of like Nazi hunters who are seeking out the war criminals. The Red Skull has an arc just before this where Magneto kicks his ass and like drops him in solitary confinement in a basement and leaves him there to starve to death. Magneto was also a Nazi hunter. This group, the Schutzhulle-Gruppe, or these German superheroes who end up getting fooled by the Red Skull in the end and humiliated.
I find it interesting. It reminded me of this movie by Quentin Tarantino, Inglourious Basterds. Yes,
Sure.
interesting take. Nazi hunters. Yes, I don't know if their approach is necessarily good. It is good, like in the broader sense, I guess. But it's still vigilantism, I guess, in a sense, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So,
They're not authorized by the law, but they're kind of morality police, and they're doing dark things to bring dark people to justice, which is Magneto's story, right, too, right?
which makes them interesting characters, by the way.
The Red Skull really purporting, like, I'm not a Nazi anymore, now I'm a nihilist, is something he's really emphasizing here, which is interesting. And we've seen this explored with the Red Skull at this point. This is the early 90s. We've seen this explored with this character for well over a decade, where he keeps calling himself a nihilist. Like, nihilism being, there's no purpose to anything. Let's dissolve all government and let chaos reign. And now he's bringing Viper in, and Viper is the evil version of that. She's the nihilist. She's the crazy lady who once turned Ronald Reagan into a snake. I love her a lot. Crazy stories in this run. So he escapes justice once again. He fools everybody. And then we have this giant table meeting where we just see how many evil things he's doing all at once. If we break apart this group that he's meeting with, the Watchdogs are basically like white supremacists in America. He's got the Resistance, who are like a mutant group fighting against the government for mutant rights. He's got the Power Broker, who's a guy giving superpowers to people haphazardly. The Secret Empire, who are like the Ku Klux Klan. Like, there's all these terrible Hydras there. There's all these really terrible people who are fomenting chaos all around the world. And he's just ranting, none of them is doing enough. Like, I want this world to go crazy. What's wrong with everybody? But truly evil. Like, he has his fingers in kind of everything at the same time. It's a little startling when you realize that.
I wish he was presented to us more like a bigger bad than we experienced in the MCU. That was my thinking. Because if he's doing all this, I was reminded of Kingpin. I think he also mentioned Kingpin's
Yeah,
operating.
there's a story shortly before this where the Red Skull tries to launch a drug dealing empire in America, and the Kingpin and him strip down to their underwear and fight each other to see who gets to deal drugs, and the Kingpin wins. This whole thing with him in his underwear fighting people, it's a real theme.
That's like his kink. That must be his kink or something. But I think he's a much bigger bad than I was introduced to, is what I'm learning. Because he has all these goons, all these guys everywhere, and I learned his daughter's name is Sin. Yeah, so I think he's a much bigger evil than I, initially thought. He's a very formidable force, actually.
He's truly terrible. He's the barometer. He's the measuring line for evil in the Marvel Universe, sort of like Hitler is in these days. The last question I want to throw at you, we have this character Mother Night, who is a telepathic woman who kind of dresses like a nun, who is just like, yes, dear, yes, dear, yes, dear, let me take care of you, dear, as he's calling your names and throwing her on the floor. That's gonna heat up in the next couple of Red Skull mini talks that I do. But did you have any thoughts on Mother Night?
Each time I saw her, I'm like, please stand up, come on,
She could
stand up.
literally enter his brain and just like
Yes.
shit up,
I don't know why. Well, I guess, what do you call that thing? Stockholm syndrome? Stand up.
We're going to be talking about that. In fact, your friend Marae was going to be joining me for the next Red Skull mini, and we're going to talk all about how the Red Skull treats women. That'll be
Yeah,
the
that's very interesting. That would be very interesting.
So a lot of these conversations, I know you have an interesting perspective being in Africa. As we're watching kind of the rise of nihilistic or Nazi factions happen in democratic governments around the world, including America, what's it like for you to watch the crazy from over there? The comparison to silly comic books makes it more fun, but it's a jarring story. I opened with Hitler's rise to power. His crazy book written in prison is what starts to get national attention, which is maddening.
Well, personally, I would say people need to stand more with the targeted. People need to, strengthen their communities. There should be a little bit more camaraderie in pockets of society. And at the end of the day, democracy needs to be strengthened because these are the things that fascism attacks. Funny enough, or ironically, fascism, I was checking the etymology of the word, stems from strength in unity. You get to see the symbol in the US Congress also, bundles of sticks with an axe, tied together and everything. And it's funny how it's now the opposite of what it should be or what it was originally designed to be. But now it's just, authoritarian, authority to one person, segregation, the old nonsense wouldn't think we would be seen in 2025 or something,
I would love to ask you two questions, and I'm not deeply educated as I ask these, but number one, did World War II hit Nigeria much? Was there a lot of impact for you, your family, your heritage?
I won't say directly, but I did my study some years ago, and I think some Nigerian soldiers did represent, is what I found, and I was very shocked to find that.
I know there
But
were some wars in parts of Africa, like some of the war front was in the parts of Northern Africa, I believe.
yeah, but personally, I don't think I felt or saw any direct, impact. We had our own thing going that directly impacted our grandparents and our parents when they were younger, civil wars and all that stuff.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask you as well. I'm not deeply familiar with life in Nigeria or even politics. I've done
a little bit of study, but I know there's been a number of political coups and things like that over the years. What was it like for you as a man living in a certain kind of democracy, reading these kinds of stories?
The craziest one I would even say experience, I think I was just a kid, I was probably 4 or 5, was the death of a military ruler. And I think that was the craziest I quote unquote experienced. But I was a kid, so I was shielded. But reading, like you said, reading through and reading back, I've been shocked to find that my parents survived many of these things. Some of them moved from place to place and finally settled in a state that they were not, some of them, not welcome in, you know. But luckily for me, I did not experience these things directly. But our parents, and mostly our grandparents anyway, experienced these things firsthand. And there was a lot of unrest, a lot of societal and economical impacts that they faced, yes. And many of them had to find a way to build their homes again and build their finances again from by doing things like maybe farming or importing of some material or something like that just to make ends meet. Yeah.
And I know, again, it's not a direct comparison, but in America, it's political parties. I know in Nigeria, it's much more tribal affiliation. Which part of Nigeria do you live in?
I live in Lagos, that's southwest.
Yeah, so if you were on the east, you could just turn to your right and say hi to Chad. I'm just right there. Terrible, terrible joke. My apologies.
Made laugh anyway.
Well, do you have any final thoughts on the world of Captain America in the 1990s?
You know what? Fun fact, the amazing actor who played that's Hugo
Hugo
Weaving.
Weaving, yeah. Who also played the guy in the Matrix films who always says, "Mr. Anderson," which is what people say to me all the time. "Mr. Anderson."
Okay, I'm going to say this. I joke about your name using that voice before we wrestle. So that guy was born in Nigeria. In fact, in my state. Fun fact, yeah. So it's interesting to find that out, you know.
I didn't know that. Yeah,
Yeah,
that's
he was born in Ibadan, Nigeria. Yeah.
look at the Red Skull connections.
Right? I mean, I think Red Skull should be a bigger bad than what we are seeing on the silver screens. I think so. From reading the things you asked me to read, fantastic. This
Yeah,
is this.
there certainly are stories where he's amplified to that level. I'd also be happy to never see him again. If I had never had to read another story about an evil Nazi, I'd be fine.
Because of the parallels we see today, I think we should, not should, we can, if we want to, tell more stories about, you know, these things that are kind of caricaturized in our books and on TV, so that the young guys can learn one a thing or two from how not to, how to, and all of that.
Yeah.
Yes, Thanos is fantastic. We all love the fantastical. But sometimes we should, I think, blend the fantastical with some politics.
We can relate to Thanos, Magneto, Doctor Doom. You can't relate to the Red Skull. He just needs to be smashed. That's it.
Does need to be smashed. But you know, his ideologies are things that we are seeing today. So even if we can't relate to him, we can understand why that should not exist today.
Well, Dotun Akande, I think you're fantastic. I know you've got some big work coming out. I can't wait. It's a joy to have you on the show anytime and every time. Thanks for hanging out with me today, my friend.
Thank you for having me.
All right, everybody, stay tuned. We'll jump back into our next Red Skull conversation next time. It involves Viper stripping him down to his underwear and putting him on a torture wheel where she gets to spin a little dial that makes him scream out in pain, and he's so into it. We'll get there next time. All right, we'll see you back here next time. Bye.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Spite Electric smart home products make everyday living simply smarter. Add color to your home's exterior with LED outdoor string lights. They're perfect for holidays or get-togethers, and they can be scheduled to automatically turn on or off. View our entire selection of Spite Electric smart home products today on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for other great deals happening this week. Save.